And now, the Sustainable Hour, proudly brought to you by City to Surf Solar Plus.
Welcome to yet another Sustainable Hour here at 94.7 The Pulse. And we are in a good mood, aren't we, Tony? Good morning.
And we've got a full studio too.
We've got a full studio. We should go right into saying welcome to Michael Martinez, CEO from Diversitet, who is also sort of CEO for us, The Pulse. Isn't that right?
Well, we own the license, and but there is a committee of management here, and you know, we do stand at arm's length, but essentially, yep, I am responsible for everything that goes on here, basically.
And welcome very much to you. And I should mention right away why we invited you today. That's because last Wednesday, we were talking about climate change here in the studio. We do that quite often, actually, but we had a full hour about climate change, and you on the same day had an opinion piece in the Geelong Advertiser. What were you saying?
I'd just also like to acknowledge that Dennis Scanlon has just come from Scanlon's front page and jumped in here, which is good to see.
Hello, welcome
Michael.
To you, Dennis.
Hello, guys.
Thanks, Michael.
Well, I guess the thing, as I said in my article, it is only an opinion piece, and I'm not a climate scientist, or, you know, actually I did pretty poorly in science at school because I thought it was boring, but as I travelled a lot and worked internationally, I worked in Canada, believe it or not, in the forestry industry, planting trees and doing things. And my family had a farm, which we sold just a few years ago. So I've actually spent, and I surf a lot, I spent a lot of my time in the environment. And regardless of what some people would have us think, I think we have to have a much deeper discussion. Because, as I just heard on the news report there, already we're getting these weather patterns, and I know it's different to climate, and we're talking about changes that potentially happen over millions of years, but it seems to me, as a layperson, totally inexperienced, that things might be happening a little bit more quickly than we suspected. You know what I'm saying? And it does concern me, because I've got a 17-year-old daughter and a 19-year-old son, and contrary to what people over 50 might think, they are totally onto this in terms of Facebook, their youth out there. This is their number one issue that they see. A lot of them, the vast majority, and they are talking, and I'm talking in their tens and hundreds of thousands. So I live with and they say to me, you know, why don't you write about something like that, Dad? Or why don't you, you know, and they're blaming me. They were blaming me last week. I said, don't, you know. So I go, you know, I'm Gen X. I was born on the 2nd of January, 65. I make it by a couple of days. I'm no baby boomer. But you know what I mean? So I guess in terms of the Addy, for all its faults and that people say, I actually think those opinion pieces where they've got people like us in there to write, is a very important thing, and it means that we're expressing some views there, and what you're trying to do is stimulate discussion, and people can take their sides. Unfortunately, the way we have it in Australia at the moment, we've seemed to have moved extraordinarily, haven't we, from 2007, where both the major parties agreed that there was a need for a CPRS, you know, and all of a sudden, not that long later, it's policies are, we have diametrically opposed views, and I don't think that is good for the long-term economic and environmental sustainability of not just Australia but the globe. So does that answer my question?
Yeah, that's right.
Question? Did you see the Michael's piece?
Yes, I did, and I thought it was very good. I agree with Michael. I mean, my daughter's 32. And if you asked her what is the most important issue, what are you concerned about for your children, it's climate change. So particularly with young people, when I say young, I think probably the under 45 demographic, if you said to them what is the most important issue in this country today, it's climate change, and there's real disappointment that we have a current government who, I don't even think, Michael, you describe as climate change skeptics. I mean, basically, I think Tony Abbott is a climate change denier. and I'm sure a lot of his cabinet are. I don't think Joe Hockey's in that range.
Malcolm Turnbull isn't either.
No, Malcolm Turnbull isn't. No. But certainly that the more conservative elements, your Kevin Andrews, Tony Abbott's are climate change deniers. That is disturbing. But I think it's very good, and I'm in quite a critic, as Michael would probably know, of the Murdoch press. But at least to say for the Adient, and I'm sure there's a lot of Murdoch journos who don't believe, because Rupert is basically a denier, so it comes from the top. But I'm sure that Nick Papp's the editor, and I'm sure a lot of journos at the Addy believe that climate change is out there. So I agree with Michael. I think it's great that the Addy does open up their opinion pieces, and they have got a broad range of opinions. Tim from the Trades Hall Council, Michael, they had an article the other day by Sarah Henderson and Richard Miles. So I think that is good. So I think it's tremendous. I think it's a lot of people might say, well, what's got to do with Michael about climate change? Well, climate change affects the future generations, and the Bursitat looks after the future generations. So I congratulate Michael on the article, and well done to the Addy for giving people, and I'm sure a lot of the opinion pieces that go in the Addy wouldn't follow Rupert's philosophy.
Well, what I would like to ask, because we have chief scientists who are actually so disillusioned with politics that they're saying the only one who can save us are the CEOs, it's the business world. And I'm just thinking, okay, but the business world can't do it alone. Mm. They need media to be with them, to have a voice, to be, you know, to get out there to people. Whatever the CEOs do, I mean, that's good. That's really important.
Yeah.
But the media, what's happening in the media? And that's why I think it's nice to have you here, because you actually read all the newspapers. That's my impression when I listen to you and your program every day. So what is your impression, actually, what's happening right now in the media?
Well, it depends what papers you read. If you read The Australian, you'll hear that basically climate change is it's not happening. If you read the Fairfax media, there's a lot of emphasis on climate change in the Fairfax media. And if you look at The Guardian online, The Guardian is a left-of-centre newspaper, I think more left-of-centre than The Age is. So in answer to your question, Michael, it depends what media you read. If you read The Guardian, if you read The London Observer, if you read Fairfax papers, it's out there. Climate change is well and truly on. If you read The Australian, it's not happening.
Hmm. And speaking about this, about why it's like that, isn't it all about money? That's my impression. For instance, now there's this review happening of the renewable energy target. And what comes out, there's just a new Bloomberg report that's come out, which very clearly states that the big, those who are at the moment making a profit from selling electricity and so on, they're going to lose out. And they're going to lose out big, lots of money. The ones who will win on renewable energy in the long term, it will cost a little bit here in the first years, but in the long run, the ones who will win are the consumers.
Hmm.
So is that what we're really talking about? Is that what's behind it? What's your impression?
There is a lot of, going back to your question on the media, in terms of, because of the online nature of the world now, and there's always people who criticise my opinion pieces. There's some people, you know, unresearched. That's I'm happy to. Yeah, I actually put them out fairly quickly. But the research that I quoted was from NASA,
yes.
You know, and the other research that I quoted was from this British scientific survey. So the concern is that I was trying to point to, and that's like we know the Western shelves are melting, but if it's happening quicker and you know, they were saying, talking about 300 years of where it's going to be a couple of metres. What if that is wrong? I don't know. You see, as someone who, like I said, if you go back to when you run X amount of sheep on your paddock and you overstock, what happens? You know, invariably, you have worse quality, you lose a lot of lambs, your land deteriorates. I always found in the end that I ran less, made less money in some ways, but I guess we had to make adjustments, and it was about the care of those animals and the care of those pastures. Now, the environment, I know that's a very simplistic thing. To me, it's a finite resource that you have globally, don't we? And we have to have a more mature discussion whereby we you know, the business elements do come into it, you're right. But it's affecting our organisation in terms of Diversitat in the sense that we've got a 5 megahertz transmitter now, and our electricity bills, we can't, The money we get from the government doesn't even pay our electricity bills. Now, we're looking at different kind of options around solar and this and that. It's all very, you know, they say it's not risky, but it is. But often the money, and I read a lot of websites, you know, the New York Times, The Conversation, lots of different things that you can now get access to. And, you know, there's movements out there at moment in the US which are talking about, you know, universities are already saying, and these are big, multi-hundred-million-dollar organisations saying, we're not investing in any coal mines. Stanford. The reality is coming. And unfortunately, in Australia, I think we are very captured by certain vested interests who are have controlled too much of the political debate. And I think, and my thing is, why would it be interesting, going back to your original point about diversity, we deal with refugees, we deal with settlement. People say to me in the street, you know, we can't take any more people. You know what I'm saying? So I have to deal with, we have to think of these issues constantly. For me, it's not just it's a constant thing. Resources, jobs, the habitat, you know, and our population is increasing. So what I'm trying to point to is, okay, I think it's inevitable. What are we going to do about it?
That's right. I mean, if we think ahead, and if it's true that the sea rise will come as it's being predicted, we will see quite a few more refugees, won't we, coming to Australian shores, you know, with the islands around.
Pacific Islands especially, and the people in the Himalayas.
Dennis, I know that you have to go to a meeting, I would love to hear just, you know, your kind of statement or what you think is happening next in the media. You're a journalist yourself. You've worked many years in this field, and in terms of,
I think Mike would agree. If you took a survey, most media, whether it's online, whether it's print, or even on radio, most media believes in climate change. I mean, Ross Stevenson, John Burns on 3AW believe in climate change. Neil Mitchell believes in climate change. John Fain believes in climate change. So if you go through radio, all the top broadcasters in Melbourne, and I'm not including Alan Jones in Sydney, he takes a different tack, of course, but in Melbourne, your main radio commentators, your mainstream radio commentators say climate change exists. Fairfax Media on print say climate change exists. The Guardian, The Daily Mirror, The Observer, etc., etc. So I think, and I think Michael would agree, there's more media that believe in climate change than there are climate change deniers, Michael.
Mm.
You'd agree?
Yeah. It's got to the stage where it's akin to saying, I believe in gravity.
Mm.
I mean, we can't see gravity. 97% of the science say that it's real, it's happening, we've got to do something.
And the world is round.
But listen. And this is true, and I think, you know, for instance, the council here itself has just been appraised for its participation in something called the Climate Adaption Manual for Local Government, embedding resilience to climate change. Mm. So at one level, the council is really up front in some way with getting ready for what's ahead of us. On the other hand, we have a mayor who doesn't say anything about this issue and who doesn't want to talk about it in the radio.
Or in his defense, maybe he hasn't been asked.
He has been asked and he's declined to come to our radio program. He's declined to even answer in writing.
We'll keep working on him.
So this is where we are at with the mayor. Mm. And I understand that in some way, when you think which political party he's attached to and so on, they don't want to talk about it. So we have that sort of situation where we on one side have a council where the people on the foot level are acknowledging this and working at least in a way where they prepare the city for what's coming. But who is going to sort of still talk about should we reduce our emissions and should we do it quickly? I mean, we have examples like Lismore, a city up in New South Wales that has now, where the council has said, because they made a survey and they asked their citizens. Mm. It's the biggest survey they've ever done. And the citizens came back and said, we want you to take leadership on climate change. And so they did. So now they have made a plan, a 10-year renewable energy master plan, they call it, that they're going to go 100% self-sufficient in electricity through renewable sources in just the next 10 years.
And the way they're doing it is really, just groundbreaking as well. It's going to be a community energy project, and it's a loan. People put money in, and they get paid back from the energy that's produced. So it's really innovative. It's not, and I guess now that Lismore's, it's not quite there, but they'll make it happen, and then other councils can piggyback on that.
Well, they certainly lead by example,
it's
by the fact that they have made the plan, and they've said we're going to do it. So I'm just questioning, what are we going to do with Geelong?
Well, there's
when we still have a media, and that mature discussion you're talking about, who's going to take it?
Well, it's some of the things, for example, that these discussions around kind of the viability of alternative energies. We know there's a similar thing happening in Daylesford, isn't there, where the mature community has got together.
Wind farm?
Yeah, two wind turbines.
Hepburn.
I think Hepburn, I think.
Yeah.
At a cost of, they're expensive, you know, it's a couple of $1 million just off the top of my head, but it's a similar thing where you invest, then as it gets drawn down, then you get into positive. You know, Diversitat was one of the original investors in Geelong in something called Geelong Community Telco. So we put in $40,000 of our funds. We're actually part of the group that then, in total, we raised $1 million in Geelong to set up a Geelong Community Telecommunications. The spend back, this is going back, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8 years in Geelong in telecommunications, was $360 million across the Barwon region. I'd love to know what the spend on power is. And if you need to start saying, well, okay, what kind of alternatives, because it's all about capital, and using your capital, which those communities are doing, investing their capital into much more sustainable opportunities, and I would think it's good for business. These are the discussions that we don't have. If you're really talking about future-proofing, some of the things that I didn't like about some of those programs is they're pretty Mickey Mouse. I don't see any kind of those discussions about, okay, what kind of things on scale could... How could business benefit from that, particularly industry? I'm no expert, but I don't see that kind of engagement happening.
You're just asking for those discussions to start. The mature...
Well, that's right, because things... Okay.
What's possible?
Because who's to say, if you didn't get some of the preliminary work done on this, who's to say the next round of investment funds coming from federal governments, who's to say that that you're not ready for the next... the next philanthropist, or whoever it is, or someone, or the next business group that says, hey, we're going to invest in this. If we don't have some of these planning done and some of this thinking, then we will just continue to draw power from Geelong and
Anglesey.
Anglesey. I live in Anglesey, so I've got to declare my interest there, and I just want it shut down.
Yes.
I have no interest in a coal-fired power plant in a national park.
Good.
And anyone who thinks that it should be there, I'm happy to debate with them about that.
So, Michael, how can we make this happen? Like, it'd be really good if that. To me, that debate is absolutely crucial as well. Like, I read your op-ed piece online, and the first comment. Have you had a look at it?
Yeah.
It's just straight for the ball. Like, if it was, it would have got laid. If it was to use a footy analogy, that person would have got rubbed out for 6 months. It was straight for the head, and it was that's not what we need, is it?
Well, and this goes in the media generally. You know, you have these ongoing letters to the editor that you read in the Independent, for instance, where one week it'll be somebody saying climate change is happening, the next week there will be some letter saying no, this is all a lie, and things like that.
Well, that's part of democracy. I mean, let's have debate. I mean, that's... I wouldn't deny climate change deniers. I wouldn't give them say no. You can't put forward your point of view.
No, that would make it worse in some way, would it?
Yeah. Sure.
Dennis, before you leave us, I just want to hear what's being discussed in the media. You read all the papers, and the budget is up now, and there's a draft that was approved a couple of weeks ago by the council.
Something that probably is dear to the heart of Michael. I thought the most, as I read it, and I could be wrong. I thought the most awful and savage and cruelest thing in the whole budget was that you were expecting people under 30, as I read it and understand it, maybe I was wrong, Michael, that people had to exist for 6 months with no income. Now, how can people exist with no income? The answer to that is they can't. They would have to come on organisations like Diversitat, like the Brotherhood of St Lawrence, like St Vincent de Paul. I was just going to come to that, Tony, and it's not too dramatic to say, and this came from the Brotherhood of St Lawrence, many of them will be driven into crime, low-level drug dealing, breaking into houses, standing behind someone at an ATM and grabbing the money that they've taken out. if you do this, you put people on 6 months with no income, you're creating an underclass who are going to turn to crime. Would you agree, Michael?
Oh, I think it's... I don't agree at all with the 6 months no dole. I totally agree with the expansion of Work for the Dole, though. Mm, yeah. So,
but listen, guys, both of you, what's happening now is exactly somehow my criticism on what the media and the way the media is tackling the debate. You know, is that you talk about the mature debate that we need to take on climate change, because there are actually lots of things to talk about in the budget that relate to sustainability and climate, but we don't talk about that. The minute I say budget change, you begin to talk about other aspects.
I mean, the age.
But the fact is that the budget is taking away something like $20 billion from renewables, and this will affect the climate. $20 billion. So why is that not being debated in the media?
Well, as I say, it depends what papers you read or what websites you look at. Look at the Guardian, for instance, the Conversation, and they're very much conscious of it. If you read The Australian, it's not happening. So it is getting a fair bit. I would say that most media is pro-climate change.
Mm.
It is improving. I think I saw a couple of articles in the Herald Sun the other day, which surprised
Herald
me.
Herald Sun?
Yes. Or the Sun Herald, whatever it's called these days.
Listen to Cristiana Figueres from the UN. She gave a talk in a big place in London. What was it called? St. Paul's Cathedral. And I think what she says makes a lot of sense, because she also comes with, first of all, some advice to what we can do when it comes to climate change. Yeah. And this comes from the UN, you know, she's the chief.
She's the head
of the whole, I wouldn't say movement, but the
UN
body
response,
that works with
the UN response to climate change.
Exactly. And she gives some advice, but she also tries to put some new words to why we should be talking, when we debate this mature debate that we have about climate change, that we should talk about love. Listen here.
My concern is timing. If we do not have a strong draft this year, if we're not able to attain a strong agreement next year, if we do not bend the emissions curve this decade, we face unprecedented systemic risks to the global population and economy. So why are we lagging behind in the timely response? Why are we not using every option to peak global emissions and descend to carbon neutrality in the second half of the century? I can, and I often do, make a strong argument about the complexity of this transformation. And it is very true. But today, in these hallowed halls, I would like to evoke one element that is missing. That one element, dear friends, is one we all harbor. It is the one most dear to every human being, no matter where we were born or which faith we practice. Quite simply, it is love. Love for ourselves, our children and their children. Love for our neighbors across the globe. Love for our common home, the earth. I'm not talking about feeble love. I'm referring to tough love. The love that is strong enough to make tough decisions because we know it is the right thing to do. Because we understand that ultimately we're all interrelated, interwoven with one another and with this planet which we cannot replace. I'm certain that all of us here today harbor more love than we are currently expressing toward the future of our children and our planet. My challenge to you tonight is not to walk out of St. Paul's saying, that was interesting, or even, that was inspiring. I invite you to walk out resolved to add one concrete action to what you're already doing to further express your love and your commitment as an individual, because we cannot ask others to do what we have not done ourselves. And just to help you out, let me give you a little menu of choices. Eliminate food waste and eat less meat or go vegetarian. Walk, bike, use public transport. Replace inefficient lighting or install a solar panel. Request carbon neutral goods, request carbon labeling. Support renewable energy projects in your community. Tell your MP or your local council leaders you want a strong international agreement in Paris and more action on home. Ask your pension fund managers how they are addressing stranded assets. Ask your churches and religious institutions to align their financial assets with their spiritual assets. And if prayer or meditation is your contribution, join a new movement called OurVoices.net, which aims to trigger reflection across faiths everywhere around the globe. Those are some of the many actions each of us can do to set our own moral compass and open economic and political space for governments and corporations to do more. Dear friends, for the first time in history, we human beings have the power to alter the physical foundations of life on this planet. But as ever throughout history, we also have the responsibility to set the ethical foundation of our global society. We have done this with slavery and with apartheid. It is time to do it with climate change. We are the first generation to understand the consequences of a high carbon economy on the planet, on future prosperity, and above all, on the most vulnerable around the world. Let us be the generation that stands up to this responsibility. Mahatma Gandhi wisely warned us that the future depends on what we do in the present.
Said Christiana Figueres from the UN, our climate chief on the whole planet.
Yep.
And there you go. That was a deeper discussion, I think. What do you say, Michael? This was like taking it to that level that you were looking for or asking for in your opinion piece. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think it's the debate, the discussion has to go on, and it has to be open, and it has to, and I guess some of the things that we talked about today, I think only just, you know, that's a contribution. It would be good. I was just talking with
Tony.
Yeah, about, you know, the Chamber of Commerce. I think it's important to engage with all levels, you know, and because unfortunately, like many things, we seem to be stuck in our, don't we? We seem to be locked into our positions. I find it interesting, you know, you hear what's just happened in South Australia this morning, where the former Liberal leader has now gone with the Labor Party because he's basically said, look, he's sick of, he wants to get things done. And I guess maybe, and if you look at some ideas of consensus, is it possible that we can try and work together and collaborate? You know, you can still have your different views, but I think my concern is, as I read those NASA reports, is, and it's not about being alarmist, I'm just trying to be a realist.
Yep.
And I think I'm trying to be conservative. Don't call me radical when I'm trying to be conservative about the future of our towns and cities and our countries and our globe. Because all you have to do is read and look at what's happening with fish stocks and look at what's happening in terms of our biodiversity. You know, the ongoing culling of our native forests.
All the indicators.
It's all there. I think that's a conservative position. Conservationist.
No. As we heard in the news just now, the skiing is in trouble, the skiing business.
Of course.
Mm. You know.
The thing about all this is that many companies, many corporations have already made the change. It's just that I noticed the other day that I think it's a Queensland Coal Council or something have employed a PR company to say that coal's okay. Now, to me, that's just about criminal. In today's climate, pardon the pun, that's akin to a crime.
Yeah, I think I was in the Gold Coast last year, and when I looked at their local paper, whatever it is there, you know, when people criticise the Geelong Advertiser, I tell you, they don't know what they're talking about, because the Addie, for, as I said, it gives a much broader spectrum of views, much better articles, not by me, but by others who actually, they bring in articles. And that's the worry, is in places like Queensland and WA, I think there is very much a lack of debate and discussion. It's a very much, you know, this mining boom, the wealth in Perth, you know, the way it's, and, you know, it's not to say that we're any better, but unfortunately it's the history, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Victoria, we had our mining boom 150 years ago. We've had our agricultural boom as well, but then we had manufacturing.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at future manufacturing, you know, 3D printing, smart manufacturing, education, and that's all built around a very different economic base.
Yeah.
We're going to continue with the mining. It's not going to stop. But we have to go, well, I'm very much in that phase now, I think, where we're talking mitigation. And if we and that's where we're at, because I can't see China and India stopping. They are already doing things, even China is, if it depends on what you read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the problems is the Europeans have done a lot. I was in Spain in 2004.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I went to the World Forum on Peace, Sustainability and Cultural Diversity in Barcelona. And now the Spanish, though, get criticised in Australia as being some kind of stupid country who are in debt and high youth unemployment. And see, that's the problem. Why would we follow their policies? You see, because they moved quickly into wind, solar thermal.
Germany did the same.
That's right. So we're very much an island nation, I think, in some ways still, that although we've got all this access to foreign media and knowledge, but we still are so inward-looking and fundamentally conservative. It's fundamentally conservative.
Yep.
And that's what we have to work within. Now, I applaud you guys for taking up the issue, because I think it needs to be discussed, and you shouldn't be just held down.
No, you know? It won't be.
Yeah. it's not
going away. Like, that's the thing. Everyone accepts it at some stage. We've accepted it some time ago, and all we can do is keep saying, this is happening, but we try not to focus on the doom and gloom, Michael. All the things, we talk about Lismore and the innovative stuff that they're doing up there and their community engagement. And we're looking at what's coming out of Geelong and saying, well, maybe we could do that too.
There's an enormous amount of capacity in the city. Personally, I've got the solar panels. Obviously, what do you find frustrating? When your rate goes from 64 cents down to 28.
Yeah.
And obviously, it was locked in Germany. It was mandated for 20 years.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big take-up. Now, whether that's... I don't know whether that was a good policy or bad policy, but we don't seem to have these discussions. It's not... You know, let's look at it and let's have the facts. I want the facts also. Yeah. I'm not talking fiction. I just want facts.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we're bringing them to you right here from the Sustainable Hour at 94.7 The Pulse, every Wednesday between 11 and 12. Thank you so much, Michael Martinez, for coming and sharing this view with us. And you can better believe it, we will carry on right here. And we hope you'll come back and tell us what you think and how it's going in a little while again.
And we'll keep pushing for this mature debate. We'll try get contact with the Chamber of Commerce, with the Mayor, and just say, look, yeah, let's make this happen.
Hope you will continue doing the same out there.
Sure he will.
Thank you. Yeah, I will.
Get on you, Michael.
See you.
Thanks.
The Sustainable Hour. Proudly brought to you by Cities of Surf Solar Plus.
Taking a deep breath there after a long discussion about climate change. Listen, there's so much going on, the local news and stuff that we also have to mention so people know what's going on. One of the news that came up this week was that the Anglesey residents are extremely disappointed, I think, you know, that the Essential Services Commission decided to grant, after all, the Alcoa Anglesey Brown Coal Mine and Power Station a license to continue to pollute.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, especially when you consider the same week one of Australia's largest energy providers said that they wouldn't be interested in buying the Anglesey plant because of their concerns of the impacts on people's health. Now, either the Essential Services Commission just don't have, that's not part of their remit to look at the health, you think it should be. Maybe, I think they're faceless people, so I think they've got to be held to account for that decision and they've got to be asked to justify it. Because at the moment they're supposedly arm's length from the government, an independent body. But I think, I think people are going to be asking questions about that decision.
What I'm thinking is, you know, these people do it because they think they can make money on it. Isn't that the idea?
But the essential services won't make money. It's up to them whether they give approval. Yay or nay comes from them.
But listen, just the same week, the news came out that there's some new technology now that can reduce the cost of producing solar panels by half.
Yeah.
And yes, the production is still maybe like 5 years away, but we hear that kind of news all the time now. Innovation and technology means that
and all the curves the rapidly curve, going down.
It's going down and hitting the microphone.
Yes, it is. And the curve, the upward curve for the cost of fossil fuels is going up. So it's simple as that. It's two lines, one going down, one going up, and it involves money. If people don't care about the climate, that's fine, but it involves money.
And so, yeah, so there's all this pioneering work going on, and Australia is actually at the forefront. This news that came out that the solar panels can be cut by half the production of it, the price for it, is actually an Australian, an expert in solar panels who's come up with this idea. So so that's interesting. Also, another good news in our little studio here came up this week is that some of the big banks really see and make reports and state that it's really a bleak future for coal, and it looks like the Australian governments are essentially powerless, you know, with all these things happening. We just talked about China and India before, and I don't think Michael is right that they are going to continue keeping up the demand for coal. I think, for instance, India just got a new prime minister who is very much into renewable energy, and he sees that as the future for India, and he wants by 2020 that every Indian citizen has electricity, but not powered by coal. No, by solar.
Yeah, and that's so we're in. In fact, I was at the Galilee Basin, and there's 9 mega coal mines planned for there. The only thing stopping them is the financing, and that's going to be the thing that stops them. They're going to have a lot of trouble at the moment getting funding for that. Because even there's two Deutsche Bank last week at the AGM, they said that they weren't going to fund the port expansion at Abbott Point, I think, maybe. I don't know, maybe I've got Tony Abbott on the mind, but somewhere in northern Queensland. And HSBC, I think, is another one. Interesting that they're two international banks, they've got a presence here, but have said that they're not going to touch it because of people's concern, and also the impact it's going to have on a World Heritage site, the Great Barrier Reef. We're at the 4 banks in Australia. The pressure's going to be put on them. How can you guys allow this to happen?
Yeah.
They're putting billions of dollars into it. So, they're not going to continue to do that because it's not economic to do it.
That's right.
The whole game's changing. And no matter how much the coal industry pays a PR company to lie and to spread uncertainty, it's not going to work. People are over that. They can see right through it.
I think we should mention and zoom in a little bit on Geelong.
Yes, let's do that.
And mention, for instance, there was an email that came out from the Geelong Sustainability Group. It was a call for being alert on what's happening with the budget at the moment. The council has approved a draft budget, but it's out now for submissions. If anybody has anything to say, now is the time. And you have up till 10th of June to send in your comment on what you think the budget looks like. And what they're saying is, you really need to speak up now and say, this doesn't look good, because what that budget is proposing is that they will be cutting down on this entity called the Future Proofing Geelong, which is actually the flagship of the council when we talk about sustainability. So they'll be cut down.
It doesn't and show a lot of...
There was supposed to be a principal bicycle network funded, but there's no funding for that.
Yeah.
And what about the environmental management strategy that we hear about is coming out in a month? Where's the money to actually make sure that it can be implemented? Where's that to be seen in the budget? Nowhere.
Until the resources are put towards these policies, that mean nothing, Mick. They just go the dust
it's just
on
words.
The shelf. Yeah. So that's I guess why we've been a bit negative about council. And like future proofing Geelong has improved the place so much. It needs to improve. It needs more, and it's no sign of commitment when they reduce the funds.
So
and people are asking, like $2 million Christmas tree, future proofing Geelong down. Where's
the priorities? In some way.
Maybe we could have a $1 million Christmas tree.
So we would also like to encourage our listeners to make sure that they have a say in this. So send an email to the council opposing this budget as it is, which is actually what Councillor Andy Richards, who is responsible for the environment and sustainability in the council, he chose to not support the budget on these grounds.
Yeah.
So if you want to support Andy Richards in sort of protesting against this, then send an email to contact us, That's contact us in one word, at geelongcity.vic.gov.au. That's a long email address, but we can put it out on our homepage. And you will always find us, if you're on Facebook, you can find us by just writing The Sustainable Hour, and you'll get straight to our Facebook page. But you can also go to climatesafety.info/The Sustainable Hour.
And it does make a difference. The council want to hear from people, and if enough people speak up, like I've heard them myself, and I know you have, Mick, saying that we don't hear from people enough. So we can't really complain about things if we don't back it up. So, and we're far from negative about council. We've been trying to get the mayor on here to have a chat to him about what council initiatives, and we'll keep doing that. At the moment, we're not sure if we're getting past his gatekeepers, but we'll keep trying. We're here to promote and be part of being the change that we both know has to come.
That's right. Yeah. And there are other people working hard on that. And in schools, lots of good things are happening. You know, with the school kids are doing things, and the school teachers are doing things. This afternoon, there's an event in Geelong at 5:30 at Beef's Bar. It's called Sustainability in Schools, Preparing the Next Generation. And the main speaker there will be Thea Nicholas from Cool Australia. Cool Australia is a website initiative that gives a lot of material out to schools about climate change and environment and so on. And supporting speakers will be Anthony Mangelsdorf, who is a project manager working with Resource Smart Schools, and David Pace, who's from Turkey Primary School, and David Campbell from Sacred Heart Secondary College.
Who we had on last week.
That's right.
David.
So that's interesting, and it seems like a lot of parents have signed up. Teachers and parents will be there for that. This is the kind of initiative that I think we need to, you know, that's where it all begins.
Yep.
The children that are growing up right now, training them and making them understand what needs to be done.
And I'm sure you'll be there with your recording equipment, Mick, and we'll
be
hearing about
that
in the future.
That's right.
And the same time tonight, I'm not trying to cut you off there, but the same time tonight I'll be at Winchelsea, taking part in the GATE debate, which is looking at unconventional gas. And we'll have the head of Rob Arnell's, the head of Lake Soil, I think it is, someone from CSIRO, someone from the Australian Institute, or Mark Ogue from the Australian Institute, an unknown environmentalist. I think there's going to be someone from Doctors for the Environment, so I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully we'll get some coverage there too for future programs.
It's a really interesting meeting, and even though it's very close now and you have to sign up for it, I think it's not closed, because apparently not so many people have signed up for it, which I'm surprised, because this is the first time you can actually hear Lake Soil talk about this topic. So we can certainly encourage people to check that out in Winchelsea.
So the GATE debate, if you Google that will take you to all the information. Starts at, they're suggesting be there quarter past six.
And speaking of fracking, there was some really good news came out this morning
that
the government has decided to put a hold on making any decisions on approval of current onshore gas exploration work plans, which what it means is that they are saying that this moratorium, which is in place till next year, June, will actually, you know, they will still hold on to that and say that it's in place. Because there's been some threats, hasn't there, that they would allow Lake Soil to begin to drill in seashore.
Yeah, the locals have been preparing for
sea spray, it's called,
Sea spray. The locals have been preparing for it. There's been non-violent direct action. Workshops. They've made it clear that they're not going to just allow Lake Soil to ride in roughshod. There was going to be a ride through, I think, seven of the farmers who said that they were prepared to be arrested. They're not criminals, but they said what they were protecting something, a larger crime, such was their concerns about fracking. So that was going to be tomorrow. But I think you've heard it first probably in Geelong on the Sustainable Hour about the moratorium being extended, and that's good.
Another really very good positive thing that's just come out is a report from, I think they're called Deloitte.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a consultancy firm.
Oh, they're huge.
They've come out with a report. Sustainability is going to be a key driver for hospitality in 2015, and that means for those in the business of hotels and, you know, restaurants and so on, and those of them who thought that, you know, this green wave and being concerned about sustainability is something that would go away. No, says this report. The title of it is Hospitality 2015, and the report is a bit of maybe an eye opener when it describes and gives evidence that or points at the you know, the trends that show that if you want to define what's going to be a successful hotel in the years to come, it's all about sustainability. That's what's going to be you know, make people feel good at the, staying at the hotel and so on. So that's going to be a key driver, they say.
The thing that we keep harping on about here, Mick, is that it is cheaper in the long run.
It's cheaper, but apparently also hospitable.
Yeah.
So there's something
gives them a market edge, and it saves them dollars. It's just, and more companies are getting starting to understand that, and it's not something that's seen as green extremists. They're realizing that it saves them bucks, so they're more businesses.
We should also mention that there's a climate conference on its way. It's just been decided, and there's a website come up for a conference on the 21st, 22nd of June in Melbourne.
Yeah, breakthrough.
The National Climate Restoration Forum 2014, called Breakthrough. And that's about taking a tougher handle on this whole thing with climate change, an emergency response level. In how we start, one of the speakers is going to talk about how we start a climate revolution. So that's on the 21st and 22nd of June.
In Melbourne.
And you have something about bikes that's happening this weekend?
Yes, I do. There'll be the Safer Communities Greater Geelong and Surf Coast. There's a bike marking event. The Torquay Janjuk Neighbourhood Watch Local Committee invites all bicycle owners to come and have their bike engraved with their identification number. This will reduce the likelihood of the bike being stolen and will make it easier to get it returned if it does go missing. So it's at the Torquay Police, NHW and Men's Shed. Torquay Police, NHW and Men's Shed volunteers will provide this service on Saturday the 31st of May, so this Saturday from 10 to 1, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the bike shed at St. Teresa's Primary School in Grossmans Road, Torquay. Okay, and they're just asking people to bring their bike and your family member's driver's licence number, and then police are suggesting that as this number is unique. And if people want more information about this, there's a phone number. I'll say it slowly so you ring Chris on 0438 324 201. So Chris on 0438 324 201. That's a good one, Mick. Make the bike safer. Theft.
But time has run out, and we have to say goodbye and see you next week.
Goodbye listeners, and we look forward to continuing this the mature bait that that Michael Martinez is asking or imploring and begging the community to
and
have
and the deeper discussions. One very good news that came out is that now 50 unions around the world who represent millions of workers worldwide, they have added their voice to this growing chorus calling for a stronger climate action. They're simply saying no jobs on a dead planet. That's their slogan. Building up to this UN meeting that's coming up in Paris next year. So trends are there.
Oh, they are.
Things are happening. That's the good news from the Sustainable Hour. Bye for now.
Giddy up.
The Sustainable Hour, proudly brought to you by Cities of Surf Solar Plus.
This is the news on 94.7 The Pulse.
This is Air News Victoria edition. I'm Arthur Stevens. Just 10 days from the opening of the ski season, Mount Buller operators are gearing up for the launch of their most lucrative period without their biggest attraction, a blanket of skiable snow. The unseasonably high May temperatures have shot to an average daily temperature of 10 degrees over the past fortnight in the Alpine area, and that's usually around 2 to 4 degrees lower at this time of the year. This is Air News Victoria.